Missing this.
Salah takes the shot. Oh! Oh, Mo Salah with one of the goals of the season. Unbelievable.
Then get this. The all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home. Featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis. Plus, almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play. Time now to say hello and good morning to Stephen Hunt. Stephen, how are you?
Good morning, guys. Are you well?
I want to play you this, right? This is Kevin Kilbane speaking with Nathan last night about Arsenal. And Cesc Fabregas just randomly gets sucker punched in the middle of this. Have a listen.
You know, I mean, I remember listening to Lee Dixon. He was on quite recently on the show, wasn't he, talking about this, that whenever anyone walked into a dressing room, you were actually disciplined by the players that were in that dressing room. And then everything else seemed to take place. There was no pressure on Wenger to discipline that dressing room. Wenger, from what you hear about Arsene Wenger's mentality, has always been just let the team go out and play, just let them go and express themselves. And maybe after that core of player left that dressing room, that weren't able to maybe bring that sort of discipline over to the rest of that group of players and new players that were coming in. Maybe it was then. I'd say maybe mid-2000s. I mean, and I suppose it's easy to say when they've had that lack of success, but the mentality has certainly switched after they had that great season where they went unbeaten. It's no coincidence to me with the calibre of player and calibre of man, I think, that they had within that dressing room, that they've gone the way that they've gone.
Fabregas was the one, I think you've spoken about this before, who was probably a little bit too mouthy. Was it giving him too much power, too much of a leadership role at a young age that caused a lot of the problems?
Yeah, maybe. If you're winning trophies, it doesn't matter, does it? That's the thing. But Arsenal haven't been winning trophies. And as I said before, I don't think it's any coincidence that Arsenal haven't been winning the trophies with that lack of, and I'd say leadership. You can be a mouth box. As I said, if Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me or others on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap and he'd be put in his box straight away. But he's protected, so he knows he's protected. So he feels as though he has a right to go around shouting his mouth off any which way he wants. So I feel as though, as I said, I mean, the same before, that there has a turn. I wouldn't want to single anyone out. It wasn't just Fabregas. And I know Fabregas, yeah, he was a bit of a tool at times. But there was many others, I feel as though, that was in the ranks there at Arsenal that were a bit like that. And I felt as though that was bred into the club with all those young players that were coming through the system. And I feel as though that they were always on a hiding to nothing with the type of character that they had maybe at the head of that dressing room, yeah.
I think, Stephen, part of this was about Guendouzi apparently talking about money to Maupai at the weekend. I don't know. Look, how important is it that the leaders in your dressing room aren't mouthboxes?
Yeah, listen, I think there's no harm in having a bit of attitude, having a bit of cockiness on the pitch. But when you start talking that rubbish, obviously, you're going to get some back. So the problem you have is that's old school banter, if I'm honest with you. I think when I first went to England, there'd been loads of people shouting, oh, how much money are you earning? Right through my career, probably into the last 5 or 6 years, until that stopped. So to hear the Arsenal boy at the weekend mention money like that was surprising, to be honest with you. I think it's rubbish banter. I think it's old school banter. I think he needs to get some new banter, if I'm honest with you, and get on with it. And I don't mind verbals on the pitch. But listen, we've all had it. And I think the old school Arsenal, well, the Premier League, when I was in it for 5 or 6 years, would have been Pires, Henry. They didn't really need attitude at the time because they were flying. And they weren't really cocky. They didn't give much away. If honest with you, sometimes you'd look for a reaction. And if you got it, you'd be happy. So this banter at the weekend with the Guendouzi or whatever is poor for me. I'm sure there's other ways now these days of getting stuck into players and winding them up. So, and in fairness, the Fabregas is a long time ago. I think I remember playing against Van Persie and just after halftime, I said, listen, can I have your shirt after the game? I had my brother-in-law who's an Arsenal fan. And by the 78th minute, we had each other by the throat. So, and then at full time, I asked him for a shirt. He told me to get lost. So I thought it was pretty petty. But that was the attitude of the Arsenal boys in that era. They were a little bit cocky without winning anything. Chelsea, the Man U lads. had loads going for him, loads of banter on the pitch, but never really always won something, so they got away with it.
So you've got to back it up. That's the thing. It's like, it's almost like Fabregas was part of a team that were able to do whatever they wanted, you know, give it and take it, because physically they could look after themselves and they were winning, but then didn't bring that culture the rest of the way through, or maybe didn't have enough support to actually inflict their game on everybody else.
No, I would give Jose Mourinho credit at the time. I think he come to the Premier League with a structure that nobody really had seen play before and caught everyone by surprise and won titles. Arsene Wenger had won titles before that, playing their way, hadn't had exceptional players do things on the football pitch I had never seen myself on the pitch. So, and they were really difficult to play against. But then Mourinho come into town with a bit more of a structure behind it, with obviously good players to back it up and money to spend on players. And I think Arsene Wenger probably, if anything, failed to adapt to teams like that that would have enabled him to win Premier League but didn't want to, I don't think. If I'm honest, I think his structure behind it was based on go and play, go and express yourself.
So just to go back to Guendouzi for a moment, right? Because Arteta has said that he kind of actually quite liked Guendouzi grabbing Mopai by the neck. And I can see as a coach that you do actually want your players to be physically aggressive, because especially at Arsenal, there's been a reputation for them being a bit soft over the last couple of years at the end of the Wenger era. As a manager, you've got to balance that out between, like, don't be like bragging about your money to the point where you're going to inspire the opposition to come at you, but you need to be physically imposing too. So what's the right way out of this from Arteta's perspective?
Well, to be honest, what is grabbing somebody by the neck going to do for somebody? I think by standing up, by looking them in the eyes and being a man about it, and what are you going to do on a football pitch? You can't do anything on a football pitch. You hear all these guys, oh, give a slap. They don't give a slap to anybody these days in football. It's very unlikely someone's going to get a punch in the dressing room, or very unlikely someone's going to get a punch on a pitch. Hasn't happened in 20 years. So to grab somebody, you're wasting your time. Just go and play a game. Have a bit of a structure behind you where you look fearful, you look like you're ready for the battle. And to be honest, if you're on a football pitch, you look somebody in the eyes, you get a feeling, right, okay, they're up for it or not. Grabbing somebody by the neck is not really going to do anything, let's be honest about it.
Is Arteta in a bit of trouble at the moment at Arsenal? Has it been a bit more difficult for him than he would have anticipated? Because we see reports that David Luiz is getting a new contract.
Yeah, I don't think he's in trouble. I think he needs time for sure to turn it around and get things going the right direction. I think with Arsenal, they need three or four bodies. They need some proper men in the team that are disciplined, that obviously have technical ability. In today's world, you need to have it in the Premier League. Even by the looks of starting the Premier League back, everyone's decent on the ball, apart from the last third, really. So you need some players that can play, but obviously you need some leaders as well. And I think Arsenal lack leaders. I think David Luiz behind it all is good Monday to Friday, but obviously has the odd mistake in the locker by the looks of it.
Before we leave this, right, Kenny Cunningham picked out Craig Bellamy as a particular mouthpiece during his career, and obviously Kilvan has picked out Fabregas. Multiple occasions he's said various nice things about Cesc Fabregas. Is there anybody that you would have come up against on a fairly regular basis that you would have had running battles with the verbals, who you were like, not having that?
I think one stands out. It was both of them. It was Kevin Nolan and Joey Barton. They just refereed, they managed to referee the game from the referee side, and that was annoying. But in a way, that's the right way to do it. It's clever, it's bright. They always played on the edge. They were always winding people up, the two of them. I think it's more so Kevin Nolan was better at it than Joey Barton, because Joey Barton would just let himself down by doing silly things. But definitely Kevin Nolan was definitely clever at it and did it in the right way.
As in, he would be chirping in the referee's ear the whole time?
Chirping in players' ears, having banter, saying stuff. And he was good at it. They got some massive results under Sam Bolton by doing it. When he was at Newcastle, he was the exact same way. But listen, there's always players that you have running battles with and you don't like. Like Keith Gillespie literally got sent off after 2 seconds for coming on punching me. So obviously I was doing something right to wind him up. Like,
What did you do?
Well, he just walked on the pitch, hit me and walked off, got sent off. So yeah, I think it's the quickest sending off in history of Premier League. I think he literally come on and stuff. I think I must have been wind and worn up for 70 minutes. And then he said, right, go and give him some. And obviously I didn't get sent off because I didn't raise my arms and I was bright about it. But definitely Keith Gillespie was the one that fell to my liking in terms of he reacted to me.
Did he catch
it? Because to this day, we always have, like, whenever I see Key around the place, we always have a bit of banter about it. I think he was in a bit of head loss at the time as well, so it was fun.
Did he catch you nice with the punch?
No, I was still standing. Listen, I've been caught on the edge a few times. I've been caught by the throat by Frank Noble, who used to play with Ipswich. I used to wind him up and train, and then eventually flip one day and had me by the neck. And to be fair, he's 6'5" and I'm 5'8", 5'9". It was hard to get to him. So, listen, these things happen, and there's no harm in happening. But obviously, these days, footballers let the press know as well of the banter. I think the Arsenal boys, it is rubbish banter, let's be honest about it. And it was banter that was had 20 years ago. Today's game is different.
You don't get away with it anymore because there's cameras at every training session as well. That's the other thing.
Yeah, like, and I think the Brighton player is a little bit naughty for mentioning what he said as well. Do you mean what happens on the pitch really should stay on the pitch until 20 years later when they start coming out
with their books and stuff? A couple of things we did want to talk to you about, what we're actually seeing on the pitch at the moment. The quality, myself and Will have been having this conversation all morning, the quality has been below what we would hope for. How much of that, Stephen, is down to the fact that these players have not been, like, properly trained? They've had very little contact training, they've had very little competitive football, that this is just very early on in a weird, short, abbreviated season, and that's how we should think about it as opposed to the end of the previous season.
Yeah, it's almost like sprint finish for them. I think nobody's come back overweight, nobody's come back unfit. They've all done what they can do from home now. There's no players that really puts on weight anymore. So they've all done what they can from home, but then it's the last bit of sharpness, and you need football matches for that. You need competitive games and playing fair places to gain that sharpness. And obviously, they've only had one, maybe two behind closed doors games before they started. You can really see it in the final third and in situations where they run out of legs and run out of steam. So I think from next week onwards, you'll start seeing better performances, better technique in the final third and more concentration, because at the moment, they're just running out of a little bit of gas and it's taken out of them.
Stephen, it's a tricky one as well, because you only have a couple of days between games. So I'd imagine for the managers, they're probably just getting their players recovered. There's not a huge amount of time to work tactically or to change things around between games, because it's just wham, bam, bam, next thing you're back out for your next fixture.
Yeah, for sure. And you're going off memory and muscle memory of when you were playing your last game. But unfortunately, muscle memory doesn't work when you haven't had the games in your legs and tactics as well. Sometimes it was very open last night in the West Ham game towards the last 20-30 minutes, and you're seeing gaps there you wouldn't normally see. You'd see players in better positions tactically, so it allowed players of the attacking nature to go forward, but then they didn't have the legs either to punish, so there would have been 3 or 4 more goals if that was the case last night in the last 20 than there was. So I think teams and managers will be quite happy if they picked up points in the first couple of games, no matter what way they've played. And they take it from there. The ones that have played well and not got many points will be disappointed for sure. Like West Ham now are on the back foot, having the manager come out and say that they're in good shape, they're flying fit, and then they've lost 2 games. So they'll find it hard to pick themselves up with Chelsea next as well.
In a weird way, the extra substitutions are actually making the games tighter as well, because instead of having a bunch of tired players at the end of the game, you've got players who are a bit fresher, and that makes it easier for teams to be defensive.
Yeah, I actually thought, okay, the first couple of games will be very important on the substitutions. Right from the get-go, will managers leave out their most attacking players to be fresh for the last half hour? Normally how it goes in pre-season is you play 60 minutes and then you play 30. So you mix it up and you play 90 within 2 or 3 days. And some managers have done that with players up 60 minutes. Dele Alli last night, for example, straight off it with 60 minutes gone and rest up. So it is difficult for them to get the right balance. The attacking players that are coming on as fresh, you would hope they'd punish the teams that are tired.
The other thing that we wanted to talk to you about was obviously, as somebody who understands how the business of the game actually works at the moment, representing players and seeing how clubs are looking for players on short-term deals. The Jeff Hendrick situation is very interesting from an Ireland perspective, for example, where he's not going to play, it looks like, at this stage. And there are long-term deals on the table from big teams who will obviously pay him very well. There's a big opportunity for a lot of players who are at the end of their contract at the moment. And then for other players, there's an opportunity to take a short-term deal and try and use that as a springboard for a long-term deal. So what's it actually been like, and what conversations are you having with teams and managers around to kind of understand exactly how this weird period is going to work from a player's perspective?
Yeah, listen, I think if Burnley were in the bottom six and they wanted Jeff Hendricks to play, I'm sure the manager would have been knocking on the door for Jeff to play. I don't think Jeff was keen to play, and I understand these reasons. It's not just Jeff, there's a load of other players as well. But if they were struggling, I'm sure Sean Dyche would have been putting out his strongest team as well to play. Obviously, he weakened his team for Man City, expecting to get beat. But listen, every team is different. Every player is different. They all have their own agendas. Like the boy at Charlton is 30 years of age. He was getting some stick because he's left Charlton in the lurch. But at the end of the day is that he's 30 years of age. He hasn't really had a proper contract. He's obviously been offered one that's at a decent level, too good to turn down. Charlton haven't exactly come up trumps behind the scenes the last year or so. They've been a bit of a mess from the board level on and with the takeover. So there's different scenarios, different clubs, and each player is different. And listen, I've never really met a player that doesn't really want to play, but there's a time where you've got to look after your family, you've got to look after your friend, you're most important yourself sometimes, so and you go from there.
So it's always a case-by-case basis, but mostly, would you, as if a player came to you and was like, look, I've been offered a month-long deal here to play, and I can either play and help the club out, or I can, you know, stay fresh and stay fit and be ready to go next season with a long-term deal with somebody else. This seems like a slightly imbalanced situation here, where I'm going to play for this 1 month, risk injury, and you know, maybe take myself off the transfer market or the ability to sign for free over the summer. In that case, would you generally be recommending, look, sit this 3-4 weeks out, take whatever crap you're going to get, delete your Twitter account, delete your Instagram for a while, and then whoever you sign with next year are going to get a fresh player, very motivated, and you're going to earn loads more money?
Yeah, I suppose you're stabbing in the dark a little bit the way you're trying to get me to say what we need to say. I think every player is different. And if it's a case of the player hasn't got a club and he's really struggling for form and he can get in the shop window, and either one, he's financially secure, or two, he's no money, then he goes and plays and he tries to get a better deal for somewhere or off the club he's with at the moment. To show some commitment to the club sometimes is a good thing as well, that has paid his wages. If he's willing to do that, then great. But again, if he's got another offer on the table and it's there and it's long term, I think the player has to take it, and unfortunately has to be a little bit, not greedy, but do the right thing for himself and his family and take it from there. I think as well, this is a totally different scenario. We've never had this situation before where players have been asked to extend their contracts for a month. The whole situation is very strange indeed, and players sometimes will get on with it, sometimes have to do right by their family.
If you were advising Jeff Hendrick, what would you be advising him to do?
Exactly what he's doing now. He's got good people that look after him, and I think he's doing the right thing. And I think as well, Sean Dyche probably wouldn't have played him anyway, if I'm honest with you, in terms of where they are on the table. They're safe. They can't really, not really a top six team at the moment. And I think Jeff is doing the right thing for himself for sure.
Yeah. Jeff Hendrick at AC Milan would be a pretty good career move from him with this perspective at this time in his life, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure. If Jeff rolls up in Italy, in Milan, there's no doubt he can play football. He's technically a good player. And if he does turn up in AC Milan, I actually have no qualms. I think players adapt quickly to the different language and stuff. Actually, it's one of my regrets. I never went to play in France when I could have. When I was 31, I should have went and played. I think if you get a chance to play abroad now, I would take it for sure.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on at Manchester United, and it feeds in a little bit from what we've been talking about here. Players who might want to move but who can't move. And Pogba seems to be in that scenario at the moment. News coming through about a potential transfer between Barcelona and Juve, and people joining the dots to say, well, this means Juve aren't going to sign Pogba back, so that's another place that he can't go. Are Real Madrid about to spend money on Pogba? It looks unlikely at this stage too. So Pogba might have to knuckle down now and play another year at Manchester United. All of a sudden, they have a midfield trio there, which looks like it's going to be a good midfield trio if they can just get some game time together and build a partnership. So what's your expectation about where things are going to go with Pogba at Manchester United? Is he there now for the next 12 months at least, do you think?
Yeah, I think we'll get a better picture as soon as the last game is kicked with Pogba. I think over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of noise, and I think Manchester United as a team deserve better without having the noise, the money they've spent on them to do their business behind the scene. I think Pogba, I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has a bit of a problem, because you could tell Fred wasn't entirely happy being taken off there, because he has done well. Before the lockdown, them trio were playing quite well and doing well. He started with Pogba on the bench. But Pogba is probably the best player they have in central midfield. It's just fitting him in to the right area and keeping the rest of them happy. It's going to be difficult for him. I would imagine Pogba will leave in the summer. After all the season is hyped down, I think Juventus will probably come back in for him and take him. I'd be surprised to see him at United next season, put it like that.
And is that a good or a bad thing for Manchester United ultimately?
Bad. I would say you're losing a player of that talent. You've failed to keep happy, whether it's through him or whether it's through the club itself. I think Paul Pogba would be better with better players. I think he would see now that there is potential for United to go on and be better. I still think they're lacking the front three of Man United's calibre to be a real threat. I think at the moment they're very hit and miss. Rashford, Martial and James are okay. They're not hitting top form at the right time for a meter, so they're in trouble to finish top five, I think, but they look okay.
Okay, because that's the, like, there was this...
It's difficult. It is difficult for Manchester United as a team. I don't think they're, like, James is playing wide right. I think he's a left winger, a right footed left winger. I don't think he can play anywhere near as good on the right than he can on the left. Rashford can't play on the right. He's playing on the left. I would play Rashford through the middle. I think Martial, for me, would be one that I would be keen to move on and try and get some money for, try and get some goals out of him, and then sell him in the summer and bring in a top-class centre-forward.
I guess the conundrum from Manchester United's perspective is that Pogba is such a talented player, and to be able to replace him with a couple of players would be difficult. However, there is, like, Jack Grealish sitting right there who you could put into that midfield perhaps, and or maybe put him as one of your front three. I don't know. But at least suddenly you'd have transfer funds from Pogba if you can get Juventus to pay for him. If you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and you've inherited the Pogba issue and he's not your player and you want to make it your team, is he thinking the right thing from his perspective is to buy some time, put the message out, look lads, we've just lost one of the best players that we've had at the club for the last decade. It's going to take a little bit of time and I require some patience. We've seen some improvement in performances. From a managerial perspective, is there any way where he thinks it's actually a win to get Pogba out?
Yeah, I think he would be on a win-win in terms of, I think he's been bought time already. He went through a real sticky patch in the middle of the season and they didn't fire him. I think they then come back good just before lockdown and have looked okay since they've come back. So that he has a bit of time. I think he has the boards backing to rejuggle the whole situation. It's going to take 2 or 3 years, in my opinion, to get Manchester United back to the level that they were at. And even then, it's going to be difficult with all the teams and the managers, quality managers that they have around them. So if Pep stays and Klopp is staying, obviously, it's very difficult for Manchester United to reach the top again. So the board have to be patient. I still think they need 2 or 3 players to be anywhere near the level they need to be. I still think that the goalkeeping situation, he hasn't been that good the last 6 months to a year, and will definitely need to pick his performances up because Henderson at Sheffield is doing really well.
Yeah, okay. Stephen, I don't know if you're a subscriber to The Athletic or not, but Stephen Ireland has done an interview this morning where he says he wants to get back into top-level football. He says he's training like a maniac, lives in the same estate as Fernandes and Fred. I presume it's not an estate. I'm sure there's, like, you know, I'm sure it's a nice enough gaff. And says that he's good enough to get back into top-level football at 33. He says he's got 4 or 5 years left, 3 or 4 years left in him. Minimum, he says, physically he feels only 27 or 28. That's one of the great lost Irish football careers, isn't it?
Listen, everyone has their own pathway in football, and sometimes it goes smoothly well all the way up, and you stay on the right roller coaster of a ride and you stay on it. Everyone has their own way. I think it's be unfair on me to question Stephen Lawrence's career when he was playing really good football. The talent is obviously there. The one thing I would say is that since lockdown, my times have improved in the 5K running, and I've been running with my lads that play football, and I look okay beside them, but I can't play football. I couldn't. Do you know what I mean? But to be fair, he's only 33, and I think for Stephen Ireland, if he can get back playing and being in a good place, then why not give it a go if he wants to? Otherwise, he's going to have some regrets. But to get back to a level that the Premier League is at and where he was at, I think it's virtually impossible. But why not give it a go from Stephen Ireland's point of view? I don't think he would have earned a lot of money over his time. If he wants to give it a go for 2 or 3 years, then do. If it's the case he's playing League One football and he's enjoying himself, then why not? Because you're getting paid for something you do, and if he wants to give it a go, then great. But to get back to the Premier League. I'm sorry, but it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, so there's no prospect of him making an Ireland comeback or anything like that, is there?
Premier League and getting in the Ireland team, you could be a championship player and get in the Ireland team. So I'd never rule it out, but because he's a talent, let's be honest about it. He's a really good footballer. But to get back into the Ireland setup would be Rocky Balboa stuff, put it like that.
And when your 5Ks were getting down to whatever they're down to, are you thinking, I could make a bit of a comeback here? Are you strictly five well, side or?
It depends. Towards the end of lockdown, I was running with Matt Doherty and he was overlapping me twice in a 400 metre track. So I knew I couldn't come back. And then well, my times have come down in 3 or 4 minutes. So, and I would have lost like 10 pounds over 7 weeks, which is quite a lot. So I thought I was fitter, I feel better, but not for 1 minute am I foolish enough to think I could come back and play football.
Right. I thought maybe that you were going to, you know, go back and play some junior hurling or something at least.
Well, the opportunity now at the moment would be there to come back and play because I'm back home, but at the same time, I'm busy with my work, so I'll keep my head down and keep my work. But in fairness, I do, and I have dropped it into the wife, but she gave me a look like, are you kidding me? so I think I'm going to stick to being busy with my work, doing my 5K runs, playing a bit of golf, maybe a bit of tennis, and actually just from a lockdown point of view, the running that I've done and the fitness work I've done, you feel a lot better for it, and it's helped me, to be fair.
Like physically and mentally, I think that's kind of been the big thing. People have, there was a survey that was released about 4 or 5 weeks ago that said the whole country had never been more active, that like 70 or 80% of people were out walking or running, and you really hope that as a country we continue to do that because it makes a big, big difference to your mental health.
Do you know what? It's so funny. I've seen four local men, a little bit older than what I am, they like Kinnescully. They go for walks every morning. You know, the girls in Kinnescully, I have video that I'm going to stick some music to it to take the mick out of them. But all seriousness, it's great for men and women, children to be out, being active, and it's really helped me through lockdown, to be fair. And I was one of them that was always in the car, was always on the go, and if I didn't go and do something, waste my energy, I would have been in big trouble over lockdown. But now that I'm fitter, stronger, and I'm not planning a football return, but actually I've lost distance with my golf game, 20, 30 yards. I've lost a bit of muscle, a bit of weight behind my ball, so I need to sort that out now, I think.
Just lifting some weights. You bring it up there. Like, are you going to be as busy? Are you going to do all the travel that you used to do? Do you feel like you still need to actually go and watch games? Or can you do some of the work remotely that you used to be, you know, like we were all busy fools a little bit when you look back on what our lives were, particularly us all commuting, the long commutes that everybody had. It makes no sense. So from a football agent's perspective, do you need to be everywhere you used to be?
Yeah, well, even over lockdown, I'd have read a couple of books and regarding business meetings and stuff like that. I think it's always good to be face-to-face with somebody, in front of somebody, to get their body language, to get their feeling of how they're going to go with their, from their business point of view. And I will continue to be on the road. Definitely going to games, I think. Obviously, we're not allowed to go to games at the moment. And if I wanted, I probably could get in, but I don't think it'd be the right look to be in a game at the moment. And from a business point of view, I'd rather be face-to-face with somebody dealing with it. Of course, you can have your calls and you can work from home. And I have a platform at Y Scout where I can watch any game in the world the next day. So I'm in a good place.